right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast, a Jaybird. Do you have
good morning, Steve.
Do you have your summer or your fall sunscreen on?
I went to the beach yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Wisconsin beach day, folks. It is just you put your swim trunks on and crawl through the culvert.
So. Low 80s yesterday. Holy Hannah, I'm telling you what. Today's the last warm day, though.
I haven't looked here. I think we've got a tick more. We'll see. What is it looking like? I got to get on the boat here in a few anyway. So it's one of those early, early days here. Let me see. A couple more days finally, and then it's like a 10-degree. Thank goodness. Needs to happen. You know, I'm no meteorologist. We could have asked the Musky meteorologist, but I'm wondering if in some capacity the old hurricane action off the coast was kind of pushing stuff up or stifling things. But hopefully we're here to get here to normal very quickly, you know, and I've been back in the swing. I'm not traveling. that's the only thing I have to say that I'm excited about, Jay. I'm not
right.
Traveling.
The only traveling is
to the lake and back.
Yeah. To the lake and back.
That is, I am traveled out, my friend. I am traveled out, but it's nice to be dialed back in. I'll tell you, it's a reversion when you have these warm-ups, and it's the exact opposite. If you're new to the game or you're trying to pattern or you're struggling in the fall, right? The trick is you want it to warm up in the spring and cold fronts are bad, but often in the fall during that transition period, warm-ups are bad. You want it to cool down because essentially we're trying to bring fish that have been holding deep during the summer patterns on those outside edges. You're trying to get them up shallow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the goal. That's the attempt. But it goes to say, don't beat your head against the wall. Go back to the summer patterns, folks. When it's like this, that's what's imperative to do, because there's a danger in fishing the calendar and a danger in going, well, this is what everyone says is working or should be working, right? We should be on, you know, top waters in the reeds, or we should be burning blades, or we should be doing this or doing that because it is October, you know, right? Well, muskies don't live by the calendar. They live by conditions. So if conditions are summer-esque, I would be doing that. So what I did, jump right back in the saddle, getting on the outside edges, getting on things that are very summer-like patterns, and bam, there they are, right? As they should be. And I think anytime we're in a transitional period, we need to just have an eye on both patterns. And, you know, I haven't scored on what would be the traditional shallow bite. It hasn't happened. Hasn't materialized for me. And I'm not focused on it, but I'm still making sure I'm going in and checking those zones, looking for all the telltale signs. And that's what's going to happen, Jack, especially seeing with my forecast, you're saying it's about to knock down. You're about to have a week of in-betweens. So don't expect that the first day it cools off that they're going to be exactly where you want them to be, because, again, it's October. This is where you should be, fish. But you're going to spend a little bit of time doing both. And that's what's going to be crucial, where there are going to be fish doing all things in between, and God forbid we start talking any turnover stuff, Jay. That's a whole other animal.
Have you, that's coming down the pipe, right?
You had your warm, you had your fun, so you're going to have turnover, and we'll talk about that probably next week, I'm betting, or a week after when you start hearing the grumblings of turnover. But right now, treat it as both. Okay, fall patterns, which is going to be that shallow by ultra shallow, but pretty much I'll tell you that I'm going to be focusing my efforts from 18 to zero, right? That's really going to be my target zone. That's kind of the typical everything target zone, but just working them effectively. Now, when you have these warm-ups and fish seem to drop back, or they seem to go, ooh, hold on, it's summer again. You know, I'm definitely dialed in on structure. That's everything, right? So I think what messes people up, and I'm paraphrasing as many questions of it, you know, obviously we always have a ton of emails, but paraphrasing as many thoughts here, for people that are kind of on the hunt, Jay, they really can't get dialed in, which is when we're in times of flux, I try to stay away from arbitrary flats. I'm always looking for that structural element. So let's say we're looking for that shallow bite, but I'm going to be concentrating on points, things that really connect that contact point of the leg, that baseline bottom to the edge, right? And sometimes that's very easy to triangulate on. That's very like, oh, here's a giant point. Or sometimes it's just simple contours that you're going to really have to dial in on and pay attention to. But that's where we're at. And every year, everybody kind of stumbles. If you have this transition, these transitional weeks when we actually get the temperature drop, you've kind of got teased with it before. It can be a stumbling point. So that's why I bring it up is you've got to check it all, but really be focusing on structural elements that kind of tie into the shallowest of shallow zones. That's where you're going to find some fish. Jay, any sucker bite, or did everybody get excited and thought it was sucker time, and then suckers were off, or what's the deal there?
A little bit. Like a week ago, you know, there was quite a few sucker fish getting caught. You know, I think I mentioned, was it last week? You know, a guy came in, and we've had a lot of these days where it's been 15 degrees above normal,
right?
Sunny all day.
Yep.
Hardly any wind to speak of, you know, it's just not ideal, right? Conducive weather to catch muskies. But it's just like, sure enough, guy popped two and, you know, came back for more. There has been some of that, you know. Jake Smith came in, Smitty Bates, you know, came in the other day, and what's he been catching fish on? It's been okay, is the way he described it. And his dad said the same thing. You know, he had a first cast fish of the day. Klein got one on the very first cast. He was all smiling and happy. But Jake's like, you know, I got some on suckers this week. I'm talking about the past week here.
Right.
Some on suckers, some on jerkbaits, some on bucktails, even some topwater fish. Of course there's some shallow fish that are getting caught. And there's been the upper Midwest reports, it's like there was a lot of big fish caught this week, but I'm not hearing hot and heavy action, let's put it that way,
right,
where people are getting multiple fish days. And we've just had this stagnant warm weather pattern. Tomorrow it changes, you know. Mm-hmm. 50s and 60s for highs coming. It's even supposed to freeze pretty hard, it looks like, Tuesday night. So we'll start to get the water temps down, and sucker fishing is going to be a major player in the upcoming week. But not cold. I mean, there's even some upper 60s for the long range for next weekend, so which is above average. So, but it's more seasonal, and you know, perhaps a better fall pattern is going to be in the books and put together by, like you said, the first day of a cold front. Hard to expect. It's probably not going to be great, but I think it's going to be by Tuesday, Wednesday.
If
it's
going to be
really good fishing.
It.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to young Herbeck, Squire Herbeck, the other day. I was just catching up with Danny there, and you know, he said it's been very, very, very niche what he's seeing on Eagle. Like, you have to do it the right way, and you got to do it the right time, and you got to, you know, everything's like dialed in on that front, opposed to what everybody wants is the fall feeding frenzy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With that being said, it happens, and you're gonna, in what you'll see too, right now, and it's just kind of the backwards of spring, if you will, right? So everything gears up and it ramps up in the south, right? The bites start happening, and then it perpetuates northerly. This is backwards, folks, right?
I agree.
You want the cooling. It's gonna be better in Canada, and it's gonna matriculate down. You need that cool off. As much as we need the warm up in the spring right now, you've got to be thinking cool off, cool off, cool off. Because those cool water temperatures kind of make all the fish go, oh, wow, winter's coming. We better do something, right? It changes their staging. And you get into this doldrum. I've always kind of looked at it. You know, they talk about the dog days of August or whatever it has been.
Mm-hmm.
The weather is like the dog days of September. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but it's just like, okay, September's no longer fall. It's just summer extension most of the time. And so we have these warm September days for the most part. I mean, especially where I'm at, there's no even, you know, I look back before I even made that statement because I've been trying to look at my own patterns and looking back at my notes and looking back on, you know, all the notes I have and spreadsheets and then all the notes I have in the Muskie 360 app on that, on my notes thing and going, okay, yeah, we used to have more of a fall transition mid-September. Now we're waiting until October minimally, right? And you've got to realize that when you have these extended periods where summer is now July, August, into September. Fish really establish some heavy, heavy patterns that are hard to break, right? Are they being homebodies and never leaving an area? No, but it's just like, okay, everything's kind of locked into that mid to deep zone a vast majority of the time. And so you really need to shake things up to not move what, not so much change what the muskies are doing, but more so change what the forage fish are doing. And then in turn, the muskies will augment their patterns. That's the big kicker was really, you know, in my opinion, you need that extended cool down to force those bait fish out. That's why, Jay, you're seeing these erratic erratic patterns where it's good for a couple days and that's bad for a week, right? Because you get that cool down, bait fish come in and they go, oh, nope, we're out of here, you know, and we need it to lock in. And once you see fall kind of really take hold, that's when it should be explosive there for sure. Anyway, Jay, there's a few comings and goings at the muskie shop this week. Actually, one that a lot of people have been, it's not like crazy, but some people have definitely been waiting for. Restock on the power lock. So hopefully, I think we did a video on this. We might be able to see that here shortly. But the Supernatural Big Baits power lock Duff crawled out of his hole. He got those done.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We found him and we dusted him off and said, get in the wood shop, Duff. Enough of that. Get in there. Now. Underlay. So he got the power locks done. Those critters are there. So, again, those are always limited production for you crazy trollers. But the timing, thank goodness. I was hoping he would have them done now, right before people get real serious about trolling. Because you want to talk about the year that you need to troll downsize stuff. You're in it. You're living it, folks. Living the dream out here. How do I get a small spinnerbait where I, whatever, without complaining? And then it looks like drop time tackle, the Triple Deuce Elite
spinnerbait.
Blinded by
six
the light.
Blades.
Wrapped up like a triple deuce. Another
That's exactly right,
running
Steve.
In the night. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? And we did a video on that. I just put it on YouTube this morning.
Duce.
And it's easy pulling.
Is it?
It looks like a beast, but yeah. You know, Tom was throwing that thing. I'm like,
what are the big,
critique, Tom. He's like, pulls easy.
What are the big blades? What's the biggest I'm looking here?
Oh, the biggest is like a size 8 Colorado on the rear, if you look at the image of it.
Cool.
And then they get smaller as you go up the arm. But yeah, there's six blades on it, and it's a big frame spinnerbait.
There
cool.
you go. Is it heavy for trolling? What is it? What's this looking like here?
No, it's really casting. Cool. It's not a heavy bait.
3.7?
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. More blades, more good. I like it. I like the drop ton stuff, but definitely. Oh, and then you've got the dog rig here. And so this is an add-on for your swim baits, I'm guessing, or pretty much anything. You can put
swim
it
baits
on,
or bulldogs? Yep. Yep.
Put
try to get that thing in the water too. It looks cool.
Put a marabou jig.
You could, I guess.
You put anything you want on there, folks. Once you buy it, it's yours, Jay. That's what people don't realize about musky baits. You can put whatever.
Really?
You can put whatever you want on there, folks. If you want to use,
tootin'.
You want to use that as a crawler harness. It's yours. You bought it. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, heck, whatever. Hang it on the Christmas tree. Now that's cool
because especially
how big is that frame? So that's going to be probably. As big as
like 7 inches long, maybe.
Yeah, so you're going to want to add that to your bigger swim baits. Magnus is going to play well with that. Your swimming dogs, your Poseidons. Jay, does it look like you could hook that up to like a Medusa or a bulldog as well, or is it just kind of like just a rubber add-on for everything?
That's how they kind of intended it, you know, according to the information we got from the drop time. That's a Canadian company, so they're throwing big baits with that, and that's what it's designed
for. The Illuminati doesn't want you to know this. You can put a marabou jig on there, Jay.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Shh.
What do you tip that thing with? Waxies?
I can't say that. They'll come.
Okay, that's a secret.
Yeah, that's a Brit.
Gotcha.
It's a bridge too far. Oh. Anyway, and then Lee cranked out some flap tails here.
Oh, he did.
Flappy flap tails. What we got? Okay, so this is the metal. What's the metal? It's got the.
It's like a redesign. Washer. It's like the original one, but it's got a redesign backside where it's a more pronounced clack when that blade interferes and flips up and clacks the metal plate.
Wackety clackety.
Sound producer.
Wackety clackety.
Draws them in.
That's what the kids are after, Jay.
Darn right they are.
They want them whacking and clacking. Nah, that's the gold standard flap tail there for you. Very cool. It's fun for me at least because last year, actually no, some stuff kind of slid in there, but this has been pretty consistent as far as stuff showing up just in time. Bondies are in the fray there.
Yeah.
The annual
got more coming too. Yeah,
annual bondying has happened just in the nick of time. Hard to get your hands on there. What's up with this though? I'm out of the loop on these. Do tell. We have another series of St. Croix.
Yes, sir.
We have, folks, yeah. Jay has a four-hour seminar prepared to guide you through the entire lineup of St. Croix.
Yep, they keep expanding. Yeah, the St. Croix Premier Muskie Series has been around longer than you have been muskie fishing,
yep.
Steve. Okay,
oh, yeah.
A long, long time.
That was
so,
wasn't that the original, that was yeah. the original top-tier rod?
Right, and they had the 6-foot casting rod. They had the 6'6" medium heavy, the 7-foot medium heavy, and yeah. you guessed it, the 7'6" was the monster big rod
right.
back in the day, And, of course, things have changed, but, well, they put a cosmetic change more than anything. It's a cosmetic and a model lineup change in the Premier Muskie Series.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's 18 total rods. 3 of them are spinning. They've got a longer 2-piece rod for the first time in a while. I think it's a 710. These don't have that Grasp 2 handle system.
Okay, I'm looking here on the chart there.
You know what
it's
I mean?
7.6 through 8.6. And the 8.6 is a medium heavy. And they got an 8.6 medium heavy, an 8.6 extra heavy, an 8.6 heavy. Okay, so we have an 8.6 heavy through extra heavy. So that's as far. Okay, so 7.6 through 8.6. Okay, what else?
Yeah,
what else is different?
In a nutshell, this is like a mid-level for them. It's like a mid-level. They have entry-level rods, and
right.
they have very high-end rods. So these have cork handles. They don't have all that split grip options. They don't have a handle system on them. They're the basic bread and bone, kind of just musky rod series to get you by. The Musky X series was the new series they put out last week. So, and that's got some split grip and longer rod options. So, and those two are
okay.
in that price range, $2,250, like in that range.
Just for those of us listening at home, right? Let me look here. So if we went the entire range, Musky X has to a 9.6, but the Premier goes to 8.6. The what is it, Elite? I can't remember what's the top tier on St. Croix. Let me just look.
Yeah, the Elite series is the real expensive high end
ones.
To
9.
The blue rods are the very, very popular
Legend
high
tournament.
Level ones. Legend tournament.
Okay, so we've got, but at this point, I'm just trying to sort through it. I think I know, but let's look here because everybody's always talking about St. Croix, right? So we have how many series now? We have so Mojo's still in play though, right?
Yep.
That's why I wanted to pull this up. So we now have from bottom to the top, you got Musky X, then you have Mojo, then you have Tournament, then you have So it'd be Musky X, Musky Mojo, Premier, Legend Tournament, and then Elite.
Yeah, roughly. You're right.
Okay. Well, I'm just looking here.
A lot of choices.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at because I didn't know if the X replaced the Mojo. So basically, I'm just trying to break it down what they're doing. So with the Legend Tournament, those all have the new Legend Tournament, all have the handle.
Grasp 2 handle system.
They got the pistol grip. They got the Ron Popeil grip. They have isn't there like a no grip insert, Jay?
There's a flat no grip. Yep.
Okay. So for those of you listening at home, that's the deal. So you have 4 tiers now of musky rods from them. What would you say, Jay? Because I've played with the new Mojos, but I've not had the Muskie X with it being so new in hand. What's kind of the feel and the deal there? I mean, legit, I know what the sales point is, but when you're picking up the Muskie X, are you feeling a tremendous difference from the Mojo? Or, I mean,
no, they're very similar. Mojos are going to run that handle system. So
that's the difference.
If that's something you desire, if that's something you think okay. that'd be applicable to any kind of, you know, presentation, yeah. you have that option.
Cut the crap, Essie. We want to know here. That's it. He got right to it, folks. Okay, so, but on the Muskie X, they have the EVA. So the big difference I'm trying to break down here of, like, somebody's really digging through, because I find it sometimes, I'm just being flat out, St. Croix's a great rod. There's nothing wrong with it. I find at times the way that they kind of put their models out where you have the length chart and then you got to figure out what grip you have. You know what I'm saying? Jay, what's the easiest way to do that? Is there any way there? Because like I said...
There is no easy way.
Okay,
no.
So we need to...
And there's quite a variety of handle types. And
that was not a loaded... I didn't know, so that was not a loaded question. So you need
to... No, there's not. I mean, even the rep's a little confused. I mean, no offense. No offense to say,
bro. We're just trying to sort through it here.
Yeah.
we're muddling through here. So if you're going to look at your model, you need to go over here and they'll say handle six. Then we look at the other graphic and we go, do I like handle six? Okay, handle six. So my opinion for muskie fishing, handle six through nine. So I'd almost look at this and go, okay, if it's six and above, that's a good handle for me. But I get down to like their 9 foot six medium heavy, which is a five handle, which has no foregrip. Okay. So, I mean, like I said, everybody's going to have their own kind of their vibe on that. But what I'm trying to get at and what I'm looking for, Jay, I'll cut the crap here. Essentially, I'm looking to see what for guys that are really doing it here and that are core, you know, serious muskie anglers. I think a lot of guys really still like having a foregrip because we like to work glide baits and we like to work big rubber baits and not everybody's going to have 50 rods on the boat. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to get at is what I'm slightly confused by is if I look at even the Mojo, I go up here to the handles.
Right. You know, is why they don't have a foregrip on some models.
On some of the ones that, I mean, get it. Well, that's all I'm trying to sort through. And I bring this up literally on the boat this week. Somebody was asking me about the Muskie X, and I told him I've never thrown it. And he's like, I don't know what to get. And I was like telling him, you know, the typical thing. I want a foregrip on there. Maybe I'm old school. I don't want a pistol grip. I want to be able to work glide baits, jerk baits, dive and rise as effectively as I can burn blades. So what would you – do you know, Jay?
In a nutshell, if it doesn't have a foregrip, it's a light rod.
Is this nutshell inside the previous nutshell you mentioned?
This is walnut.
I'm trying to conceptualize it because you already said we're in a nutshell, so is this like – are you
getting – it's a walnut. You crack it, there's something good inside there when you're done.
Yes. Anyway, what would be the model – is there a model you go, okay, this is like the – what series has like a 9 and a 9.6 with a foregrip that is what I would just go that as a baseline? Get it all done, Rod. Is there one?
A 9.6? No, yeah. not in a Premier. Okay. A 9.6 you could in a Muskie X or you could in a Mojo. And yeah, heavy action rod would get the job done.
Okay,
it's a pretty good choice for an all purpose.
I mean,
you can still throw bucktails with it, but it's heavy enough that you can throw moderately weighted stuff.
That's the thing. Nothing wrong with it. A lot of times when you get a lot of different models with all those different grip configurations, so it's worth sorting through. And they, like I said, they've expanded the line quite a bit. It is what it is. You know, some people love it, some people don't. I'm not throwing them. That's why I ask. So. But you think for the budget buyer, though, that Mojo or the Muskie X is going to be sufficient, you think? Going to hold up?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, they feel
good,
great.
Good stuff. Well, and the Premier stuff coming back, that's cool. Anything else new? No. Have you thrown the Smitty Big Jerk Bait, the 10?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Got a weight system in there. So, yeah, we threw that with weight, real slow rise to it with that. Of course, you can go overboard and add more weight and get a dead neutral, but yeah, it's a dive rise. You know, with the length, that's the thing with a lot of people. Here's one thing that's kind of annoying to me, and you're going to notice this too, is if you take a bait like a 6-inch Smitty Jerk, mm-hmm. or anybody that's got a small jerk bait that's intended to be erratic, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but it might be called a glide bait by someone's label. Like a Smitty 6-inch, there's an 8-inch, and now there's a new 10-inch, and mm-hmm. that 10-inch has a weight system. The longer you go, same thing with Sandcats by Big Fork. You know, the 6-inch is more erratic. It's got more wiggle.
Mm-hmm.
As you go longer, it's going to have more glide to it. So it becomes more of a dive rise bait, like a Suic. You know, the longer mm-hmm. you go, the more pronounced long sweeps yeah. that thing makes down and slightly to the side. That's cool. But the small ones are erratic. Mm-hmm. They're not working, right? They're doing their thing by being unpredictable.
Well, that's just your... All you've done, I mean, increasing the surface area of it, you have to look at the dive curve too. I have what I call nobody. I mean, like four dudes would buy them, so it's not worth making the mold. As I have Mega Titans that I've made, right? So I've got a 12, and then I have a 15.
Oh, I've never seen those.
They're
cool.
Hanging in the garage. They're just clear coat. I mean, you know, all the extra time I've had this summer, Jay, I was able to go out there. Yeah, right. Just out there airbrushing.
Sarcasm, folks. Yeah.
I went to Hobby Lobby and put feathers on it, folks. Maybe this winter, if I catch a breath, I'll get on it. I've got the clear coat done. They could use a real paint job and then another level of clear coat. But as far as running, they're fine. And you notice that is obviously the bigger the bait, the more force that it takes, but it is a less erratic dive. However, you can get a far more erratic float up because you realize you have larger mass of a lure that wants to spring up. It's like if you try to hold a golf ball underwater, I don't know, golf ball sink, bad example. You try to hold like a
tennis ball
underwater versus trying to hold a beach ball underwater, right?
So yeah.
You can hold the tennis ball because it's you know, less mass, but the bigger the bait, the quicker it's going to float up. That's why your big baits have the weight systems, obviously. But, you know, if you run them unweighted, they're pretty unpredictable. But I know what you're saying, that smaller bait, you know, you're changing the physics of everything there pretty much. So you can get away with the 6-inch baits where you get that more erratic deal. You know, we're in that big jerk bait time of year, and I'll tell you, I was shocked by it, and I love the Smitty because the Smitty small jerk is one of my faves. That's always a fun bait. I call it Pac-Man. Sorry, Jake. You know, they got the Pac-Man lip in the front. Once you get that beat up,
oh, yeah.
Once you get Pac-Man beat up really well, why don't you paint me one that's like yellow with ghosts on it? Put the Pac-Man ghost on there, Jake. Pac-Man, Konami can sue you, whatever, just do it for me. But you got you got the Pac-Man bait here, and like you said, that 6-inch size, that realm is really, really erratic. And you know, I find that like when you go up to these bigger jerk baits that don't have a tail, you have to have the weight to get the dive, where like the big Smitty jerk, I haven't thrown it yet, but the larger size I really like, in the same vein that like the Leo lures and things of that nature, over top the shallow vegetation, right? Quick, jam it in there. A lot of times just that thing punching in the weeds is going to get the job done. But we had shot, this summer we shot the video, and we were going through, like, as far as like big, if I really need the left to right float back, and I'm continuing with rocks with the newer bobby baits. And if you remember when we shot that video, I was shocked by how well that thing ran.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I remember.
And they've done some, I don't know if they've tweaked it or if we just hit a good batch. And that's the thing with wooden baits. Sometimes you get magic. Sometimes you get so-so. Those bobbies, I think I took two from the shop. And I called Danny. I said, I'm bringing you one. He said, please do. Because I shot that quick thing on my phone to show him. That was a good batch of bobbies. Maybe all of them are that good. But I pulled two off the shelf. Then both of them were like, whoa, okay. Okay, you have my attention. And like you said, the key to that's getting that left to right. One thing one last tip I've had, and again, with the bigger jerk baits, at times what I've done is play with hook combinations because that's the thing, Jake. The more weight you put on, yes, it'll run deeper, but like you said, it's a less erratic float back, right? is playing with hooking configurations just a little bit, so to minimize the actual amount of lead that I have on there. And you'll see, and I only say this because the lead is stationary on a bait, right? So the lead in when you're making a bait or you're working on baits, lead is changes the center of gravity of the bait, and it doesn't move. It shouldn't move. But with hooks, you can get a little more left to right. Say you go to like a triple X hook or a right way heavier hook on the head of the bait, the hook is free hanging, so that bait might go to the left or the right a little bit easier than adding that weight to, say, the body of the bait.
And yeah, good point.
And the right. Same thing can be said, and people have gone, well, why don't you just, with before the Titans were there and all this stuff, why are you not putting the weight systems in Suix? Why are you putting bell sinkers on them? Right? Because they can free hang. And so that bait is going to get, in my eyes, it's going to get more side-to-side action on the float back, right? Because it has wiggle room on where the weight is. So you got, it can be pronounced at times where that weight is a pendulum opposed to it being stationary and augmenting the center of gravity on the bait itself. It's hanging off the hook, which allows for it to have more free movement. But anyway, enough for that. You know, throw a black bucktail at the weeds, you'll catch a fish.
So, there's that too.
Only other thing, I got a text from Glenn there at 54 Bust. He just put a video out on the Mustang. So I threw that up on the app. That was kind of cool. He's been hucking and chucking that thing. And as well, I was impressed. He asked, you know, hey, Herbie, got some baits? And he ended up getting a flipper. And you're talking about dive and rise baits. He picked up a flipper from Herbie and actually has been catching some good fish on that bait, which is, you know, I'm Mr. Titan boy, so I don't spend enough time with that bait, but that's another pretty cool bait with a tunable tail. So that's going to be interesting to see what he does there. Anyway, Jasifer, we better get to it here. I'm going to have to get on the dang diddly boat before too long. Josh, what's up, guys? He's an OG listener and second time questionnaire. Ooh, very nice. I know I speak for all of us when I say we are still waiting for What's Eating Herbeck segments. Oh, man, I forgot about that.
What's Eating Herbeck?
Yeah. If you haven't noticed, we're the king of like saying, like, let's do this. And like next week, we're just busy and forget. But we need to bring Jay, make a note. I'll just get Herbie to record some rants and we can just use them intermittently this winter. Or heck, he'll just be at home. So we'll just use them.
I don't remember that at all. That's a great idea.
Let's we got Herbeck on there. Yeah. We were. He was on there just giving her tar and feather, if you will.
Just insert random rants. In a podcast.
Freaking scopers. They're scoping them all. All right. Next question, folks. You know, whatever. Whatever. Whatever's eating Herbeck's. What's eating Herbeck's? What's it? What is it? What's eating Gilbert's? Gilbert
Grape. Yeah.
What's eating Steve?
Different
Herbeck.
Film. Yeah,
different film. But yeah. There's so many. Man, you say that, and as someone that's spent extended time with Steve Herbeck, there's always something. There's always something, you know.
No doubt about that.
I've heard some rather amazing rants about chipmunks.
Okay.
Yeah, boaters. Heck, from every facet of life, he has an interesting take that's kind of negative, and I kind of love it because I'm sardonic.
I'd like to hear his rant currently coming up here on surface leaves and pine needles.
Oh,
I bet he's got one. Because that's coming, baby. They're coming down here hard.
Brutal. Most people, we'll have to put an advisory on that one. It'll be so profanity laced that. Anyway. He said, Josh says, I always hear about Minnesota guys fishing reeds, sand flats in early fall. I've tried it here in Northwest Wisconsin with not much luck. Is that a big fish strain thing? We don't have leech lake strain here. It's all greenies and planted Great Lake spotted to his knowledge. Here's the thing. Those Minnesota fish just notoriously push up in the reeds and on the sand. Once it cools off, that is a Minnesota thing, if there ever was a Minnesota thing. And the key to capitalizing on that is make what I call the Minnesota bomb cast and turn the handle and don't stop, right? Just burn it. And those guys capitalize on that. That's really from the composition of their legs. You know, if you look at, and I'm basing it off of, say, like a bit on Cass, Bemidji, Leech, all this stuff, where some of these areas you're going to have a deep weed area, and then you're going to have like a sand void, and then you'll have like the reeds. But a lot of times what it is there are panfish going into those reeds. And it's not, it's for me, it's not that the muskies are necessarily sunning, which they'll do in some capacity, but they're going up there and capitalizing on panfish that are in those reeds. So if you have a body of water and you're identifying there's, you know, super shallow brim, panfish, anything of that nature, crappies, whatever, if they push up super shallow, you're going to have that same bite. It's just not a, just not the staging that happens with those bait fish in Wisconsin, right? If so, for say, maybe there's one lake that they do it, nobody's talking about it, you know, because there's a void in the shoreline cover, or because the, you know, you have so many factors that contribute to that. But with the sand basis of those lakes, that really, really is a thing. So you're not doing anything wrong. Just keep grinding at it, you know, and again, be mindful for it, because there are, you know, there are bites like that, Jay. It's just not reed oriented per se. And I've found a lot of stuff in Wisconsin, and you're aware of this too, where there's some shallow water bites, but guess what? They're suspended, right? Where you'll have open water bait fish and things of that nature. So it's just a different, you're talking about, you're comparing two different areas entirely, but still taking consideration, because I always pay attention to what everybody else is doing and go, okay, is there a time and place on my body of water or the area that I'm fishing where this tactic or technique could work, right? So what are they doing? How are they doing it? It's about timing and fish staging, right? And it all boils down simply to, if they're not there, you're not going to catch them. But are those techniques, those presentations viable a different time of year and a different kind of thing? Carly, what fish finders do you prefer for muskie fishing? Okay, I think, Jay, I think we answered some of that. Last week we talked about fish finders. I think,
yeah, quite a bit. You did, yeah.
There's no preference. Go check that out. Go back to last week. We really hit it on the last episode. Fish finders are to each their own kind of thing. You know, I'm right, and guess what? The guy that has different stuff thinks he's right, and that's fine. It's whatever you like and whatever you're doing. All right, Paul the Plumber, heading to Lake Tom area in 2 weeks. What lures do you recommend for the crazy weather they've been having lately? Jay, he's right in your neck of the woods. It's kind of wide open right now, right? You got a little bit of everything. What should be at least, give this dude like a 5-6 bait starting lineup so he's covering all the water column, because that's what it's gonna take.
Yeah, Lake Tomahawk, Minocqua area lake, big lake, one of the biggest lakes in the area, deep, clear, good weeds, good forage, decent population of muskies. There's good ones in there. If you want to be working deeper stuff, so soft plastics would be number one, something that can be probative and, you know, get down and, you know, get down 8-9 feet and work those deeper drop-offs and points. And bait-wise, magnum-sized bulldogs, Magnuses, regular size Medusas, deep diving crankbaits, something you can stop and start. Countdown depth raider would be a good one.
Yeah, that's
to Paul, I would avoid bucktails in general.
To pause you for a second, this late in the year, and it always gets overshadowed by rubber, is like a Countdown Booker or a Rachel from Livingston or a Triple D. And I'll let you.
Yeah, it's a deep jerk.
Yeah, and they're getting overshadowed. Everything's switching to rubber right now. It just is. And whether people like LiveScope or not, the trends are all going rubber, because LiveScope fishing, you want sinking baits. And so people, if you notice, Jay, and you even look at like what's if it's not a trolling bait, there's not a lot of people losing their mind on casting baits right now as far as casting cranks. And so they're seeing even less of them, which opens up a huge opportunity. So anyway, continue, but I just had to point that out of why I think it's so paramount.
No, that'd be the handful that I'd go with for sure. Bucktails are too high in the water column. I think you're limited to contacting you know, getting that proximity thing going with bigger fish, because they're just going to be a little bit deeper in the water column.
What's the boating pressure like till?
Oh, much less.
I know it's much less.
Yeah.
But I
post Labor Day, yeah. And for the most part, there was a lot of tournaments in the area this weekend. I mean, a lot, like super peak. There's basically, you don't have to worry about that. There's no large organized tournaments where, you know, they take over. You know, the week before, the Hodag was going on. There's guys coming in. There's a little lake. We've been out there. You know, remember Bearskin Lake,
south of the
shop? They assigned 15 boats to that lake. You know, you pick a family of lakes for the Hodag tournament. So that's a lot. That's a lot for a 350-acre lake or whatever. So if that was on your list to go out there that day, you'd be like, holy cow, what's going on?
Right.
They're all and it put out fish. He got a 48.5 out of there and five others.
Right.
From what I saw online. So
dangy.
Yeah, no, not a problem with boat pressure. Yeah, there's a few walleye guys out there. Fall crappie, that's a big thing right now. That can be really good right now, too.
Watch where those boats are, folks.
But, yeah, they're going to be anchored, so
yeah.
you can figure it out. No, don't worry about boating pressure. And if you want to troll out there, there's plenty of room.
Right. But that you make that point about fall crappie, you pay attention. No matter where you're at, if you see the crappie boats, you know, he's in there a little bit.
Right.
Give him a little splashy poo, right? Huck that bulldog out there and give her a second. There's always, and I'll tell you, and just listening to kind of your take on that chain right now, and again, we're in that transitional time. There are so many opportunities where, you know, you have last question, dude's looking at that reed bite and everybody's thinking super shallow. One thing I can promise you, it is October. Most, if not all, muskies in any body of water that sees pressure, guess what they've seen, Jay? They've seen topwaters and bucktails. Heck, they might have been caught on it in June, right? Or July, or once a month, who knows? So if you're still in the bucktail state of mind, you're going to suffer for it, you know, depending on how much pressure it's seeing. If you got mystery Lake X that, you know, they don't see any pressure, who cares? Do your thing. But on pressure waters, being willing to do something different gets more and more important the later we go in the year. I mean, again, you know, conditioning. So put away the blades and, like you're saying, going deeper. I love what you said, the fall crappie bite. I've been paying attention to that as best as I could, because that's another opportunity as far as their staging. You know, obviously a great food source, and checking the area in and around that. One thing too, and it always comes up, and we start getting in the area of big baits. Right, we definitely need to be thinking slightly bigger, and just like my take on suckers, you know, if you're on a body of water that notoriously tops out in the mid 40s, you don't need a 20-inch sucker, right? You can also do yourself a disservice by going too big on your baits, just flat out period casting bait wise, right? Where I've seen guys go, oh, it's fall, I must break out the pounders. And so be judicious on that, right? Yes, you can get a strike, but like you were saying, Jay, like a regular sized bulldog, or you said a mag dog, but there's some applications where a regular sized bulldog or AOE Neal is going to be sufficient. So don't size yourself out just yet. I always feel like, though, once you really break into once we start saying the cold water period, right? When you start hearing that term bantered around and it's getting cold, 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 that's when I kind of go, all right, let's all bets are off. Go big or go home in that later period.
And another thing, Steve, too, is this is kind of a misnomer almost, too. Like in Bulldogs and in Medusas by Chaos Tackle, right? Mm-hmm. They have shallow versions, and we carry tons in different sizes. The shallow version is not for working shallow. It just sinks slower. So that's something, as the fall progresses and you want to slow down your presentation, it's still sinking. Yeah. Yeah, key on those, and a lot of people do, and they do well with them as we that, go later in the fall.
You know what? That's definitely a great tip there for sure, because you people just that again, back to what I was saying about everything's going rubber based, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I made a living with triple D's for years. Just that was kind of my winter go to. Instead of, you know, you have your foundational bait where you go, okay, I'm throwing. You know, most people start out, okay, we're throwing blades and we're branching off from this tree. I would always start with a triple D and kind of augment from there just because of the depth control of it. But suspending baits allow you to work them tremendously slow. And that's kind of, like I said, the issue where we're going all rubber with everything. That's the trend, right? It's been the trend for a long time. I'm seeing it now even more in bass, which is going to end up in our wheelhouse even more coming up here. Is like you said, the depth control of shallow rubber, where if you have a Mega Monster Medusa or you have a Pounder, its rate of fall can be far too intense, right? And in that cold water period, as we get into that, I think it's important to like be willing to count things down. Because you've got to get them to depth, and it, you know, what's 5 seconds to catch a fish? And then as well, say like your Krakens, you know, same thing. You don't have to run it with the deep weight to work it deep. Just throw it out, count it down, get a feel for where it's at, and then work it from there. And Jay, Chaos makes those weight kits, and that's pretty much, Bulldog has like their nose weights, but I like the Chaos flat weights for any like pure rubber baits, just because I can put it, you know, it sometimes at the rear of the bait, sometimes at the head of the bait, depending on how it's falling, right? And I've done really well by just adding fractional weights to shallow rubber, right? So, you know, playing with, okay, that was too fast. And this is, again, a benefit of LiveScope. Okay, I got to follow, but it's, he's not moving that fast and he's kind of behind the bait and he's not, you know, not really aggressive on a bulldog because it's the rate of fall is too fast. You go to the shallow dog, you add, you know, quarter ounce or you add whatever, and you've augmented the rate of fall. And I brought up the Kraken because designing that bait, that was part of my thought process of the running depth is important, but the rate at which it falls is just as important based on activity level. And the concept being, you know, you don't move a fish on a super slow presentation and then just do some speed it up 900 miles an hour and they just lose their minds every time, right? You want to have a controlled rate of fall with rubber baits because they'll nope out. If it's just falling too fast, they don't want to chase at times. You've got to kind of let it hang and dwell in kind of a zone, if you will. You know what I'm saying? If that fish is not superbly hot and it's falling 4 feet a second, 2 feet a second, whatever it might be, the rate of fall can just, they'll just nope out. Too much work. You know, it's evading too fast and they just don't want to do it in the cold period, you know? Anyway, David, caught a fish. It's slightly bent the hook in the net. Do I replace the hook or what do you feel about bending it back? You know, it's got a good point on the hook. I mean, I'm definitely once a hook is damaged, it's done, because you've weakened the metal regardless.
That's a good question. Yeah, you know, right.
I
think I tend to agree with you on that one. There's some hooks that can't be bent, and if they are, they're probably damaged.
Yeah,
but the lighter ones, the light wire ones. Yeah, you've substantially weakened the wire.
I mean, it's like with anything. If you take a piece of wire and you bend it back and forth, it will break.
If you open and close your snap too many times, it's worn out.
All right. So I tend to not bend them back. I have had lazy moments. And when I've bent them back.
We all have. Yeah.
Like, it's like you've been out there 12 hours ago. Where are the split ring pliers again? All right. With that being said, I don't bend them if they're bent out. I'll bend them back if they're cocked off to the side, like you snag a bait up and I'll kind of bend it off to the side. I've trued them back up and then I feel bad about it. I go, why am I being so lazy? Take me 5 seconds. But, you know, if you don't have them available, don't worry about it. But I don't like fishing with a hook that's been bent out. You're just asking for it. And then, like all musky fishermen, Jay, you go, well, if I had changed the hook, I wouldn't have lost that fish, right? And you think about it for 7 years. You know, you're laying in bed that night going, why didn't I change the hook? So I've always been of the ilk that minimize anything that can go wrong, because there's plenty that's going to go wrong. So let's minimize the possibility and try not to contribute to your own failure. You know, like, right. With that being said, I'm sitting here in the bait cave, of course. I'm looking at the wall of rubber baits that I'll bring them. Somebody will bend the hooks out, like snag into a tree on, say, like an alien eel, and then I'll have like, okay, I'll bring it in the house. Like, I'm going to change the hooks and instead of just grab a fresh one off the wall. So I've got, you know, maybe if I can get a good snowstorm this winter, I can bend, you know, take all the bent.
They call those semi-retired baits.
I know. It drives you nuts. You're just like, right now I'll just vent. That's the fun thing of being a musky guide, of like, especially if you got a little lead time, right? Say you had a day off or something like that, and you go clean the boat up and every bait's ready to go. Everything's good. And then a week later you go, all of my things are ruined. You know, everything I own is broken. Why?
Kind of like my office at work. Yeah.
It's just like, I'll tell you, and I have put more skirts on Krakens. It is, for me, it worked out for me. I was very tired of rigging tubes on the boat, I will admit. And with the Kraken, and actually Darcy Cox texted me about this, you know, it's like putting tails on and, you know, it's better than doing the whole rigging. You know, the bait's going to run the same, right? But it's just like, dude, I'm like, all right, I just put the tail on that. And then somebody caught it in a brush pile. It's like, oh my God, I'm doing another tail. Oh, and the hook's bent. Oh, and there's always something to fix. That gets you just sick of it after a while.
For sure, yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool. You frayed the line. Thank you. I'll be thank you, sir. I'll be getting all over that this evening, and you just throw the reel on a shelf and grab another one, but just lose your mind. But you got to take care of your gear, and I'm sure we'll beat on it later about the fall stuff as we get later in the year, and you can get away with some garbage. You know, you don't want to, but I mean, have I taken like a Steve's meat grinder spinner bait and the hook bent? I just bend it back and go, eh, it'll work. Yeah. But, you know, you got to watch your gear, because at the end of the day, you don't want to have, I'm not one, but two monster fish, you know, things. If you remember this summer, I had the one open the snap up and you're just like, really? If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. So, other than that, what do we have? How many more? Oh my good, we're just always going to be behind on Q&A, folks. I apologize. I'm looking here, and maybe if we didn't prattle on forever, like it's like a squirrel finding a tin or a raccoon finding a tin can. Jay, you bring it up and you start talking about this stuff, and you just go down the rabbit hole on it heavily. I know I asked you last time, but when are they calling for like? For it to really crack cold up there, do you have any inclination? Is it gonna be like nice enough that if somebody want to sneak up there in the night, you know, you don't want to be in the cold and the snow, but it's like the cold gonna hit, you think, in November, or when does that usually hit up there, when it gets kind of like not dicey but too hardcore?
Yeah, that's gonna be November. I mean, we're well into October here, and it's I'm looking at the long range Monday, 59, 58, 57, 62, 65, 69, 69 next weekend. Huh, unreal.
Nice.
Well, yeah. Whatever. So, yeah, there's no, apart from this cold front that's going through tonight, that's going to throw us some storms, and there's plenty of wind. Let me tell you that right now. It's crazy. Yeah, 59, lows in the 30s.
Yeah, nice. Good stuff. We'll
get things cooking, but yeah, I mean, no unfishable weather climactically in the future that would be like a trip ruiner, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, high of 30, you know, every day.
Yeah, that love
hopefully
those.
That's well into November.
Love those. My favorite.
We will see.
Yeah, anyway. Well, I got to go get on the pond here, Jay.
Good luck fishing today, Steve.
Say good morning.
Good morning.
Buongiorno.
Thanks, guys.
Later.
Bye-bye.